Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And today, we are privileged to have back the one and only warrior princess. Immigration attorney Nadine Brown joins us today. Good morning, Nadine.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. How are you? Welcome back.
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
So I asked Nadine back because I know since the new administration came in, there have been some reversals or some changes, and I wanted to get caught up on that. Plus, I want to talk a little bit about immigration and Black history. So I'm going to leave it up to you, Madam Princess, to get us started.
So everybody's hopeful and positive thinking when it comes to immigration and what the Biden-Harris administration has on their agenda to improve, I guess, the image of immigrants in this society and also the policies that have been undercut by the previous administration. Everybody who watches the news or at least follows and keeps up knows that there's been some changes made, a reversal when it comes to policy initiatives and just perspective. One of the major things that has happened within the first few days of the Biden administration was increasing the refugee allotment numbers. Under the Trump administration, we know that he was very anti-immigrant, and that was a part of his foundational rhetoric to spur his base and his voters. And so he reduced the refugee numbers, and those are individuals that are coming from overseas through the Office of Refugee Resettlement, through some of the community-based organizations such as Catholic Charities or Church World Services and whatnot. From 15,000 during the Trump administration, President Biden will try to increase those numbers from 15,000 to 125,000, which is previous administration numbers, so that people coming from war-torn or disaster, natural disaster-ridden countries know that we're open and able to facilitate their resettlement and going back into society in some meaningful type of way. So that's one of the major differences between the two administrations and what President Biden is trying to do. In addition to halting all border wall construction, whether it's through technology or actual physical wall, a lot of people were concerned that that's where a lot of our financial resources through the Pentagon budget was going. And so President Biden, through an executive order, is also initiated a suspension of those activities, which is very good for, I think, for many of us. In addition, there's a review of the Migrant Protection Protocols, or known as MPP for short, which was the stay in Mexico and wait for your asylum interview for all of those individuals coming up through Central America. So that has been paused, as well as the border wall construction. DACA has been full steam ahead. So for those individuals who are part of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, because they came here as children and had overstayed their status or came with no status, graduated from a high school or college, they're able to proceed with the renewal of their applications. And also those individuals who previously were foreclosed from applying during the Trump administration because, as many people know, President Trump was against the childhood arrivals and so had suspended the adjudication of those applications. So now those applications are being accepted by the service centers and people are submitting to get their work authorization, which is also a major issue that had been by the Trump administration revised as far as work authorizations for DACA recipients or for students who are in OPT or optional training, and also for asylum. So those policies are also being reviewed and reversed as far as the accessibility and eligibility for work authorization for various individuals who have non-immigrant or temporary status. So people are very hopeful when it comes to that because a lot of people come because they're not only looking for a safe way of life, but a better opportunities for economic self-sufficiency. Some other things that are happening or have happened are that the Muslim and African travel bans that were previously instituted by the Trump administration because they were considered state actors of terrorism have been rescinded, but that does not include the COVID travel bans from areas that are noted hotspots, and that would include Brazil and some of the European countries as well. So that has also been an incredible change or 180 with administrative policies. Some other notable items, because there are so many that has happened, because we well know that the Trump administration had been gunning literally and figuratively for immigrants in every particular aspect. The other notable activities or actions by the Biden administration has been to revoke the healthcare proclamation, which had required individuals coming from abroad to the U.S. to demonstrate that they had or could obtain within 30 days of their arrival health insurance, which any individual who's a native citizen or naturalized citizen knows health insurance is a big issue or healthcare services is a big issue. So even if you're an immigrant and you're coming from abroad and you don't have travel insurance to cover your expenses, then it's equally difficult to get health insurance while you're here. So they have revoked that mandate or policy as well. Some other things that are notable is the Buy American, Hire American policy initiative that the Trump administration had, which essentially sort of forced or had the undercurrent for a lot of the adjudicators to make sure that they would deny the applications for foreign workers who were either H-1B or L-1 managers from companies abroad, and essentially that would just try to limit the access of workers coming in. What the Biden administration has done in revamping or revising and rescinding is to say it's good to buy American because we want to generate manufacturing and service jobs and what have you, but not limit the applicant pool of workers. So we are encouraging people who are skilled and qualified who would come in through an H-1B skilled worker program or the L-1 intercompany transferee from abroad and get those types of applications approved, because during the Trump administration, a lot of those applications had been denied, and a lot of the tech sector and some of the Fortune 500 companies were hurting because they couldn't get their workers from abroad into the U.S., you know, Apple, Google, Facebook, and whatnot. Some of the global enterprises who have a presence overseas and also bring workers back and forth were having difficulty with the Buy American, Hire American policy because their applications, which had previously been approved, were then being denied just on a policy basis because it did not conform to the Buy American, Hire American initiative. So those are some of the things that have been afoot and that is ongoing with immigration, of course, everything is being reviewed. One of the things that people should be aware of, if they aren't, is that the Biden administration was trying to halt or postpone or put a pause on a lot of the deportations he had set for at least the first 100 days. But as we know from previous history, that the courts also are involved, and because of our democracy, the courts are a check on the executive office and the legislature as well. And so even though President Biden had put forth that proclamation that was stayed by a Texas judge to say that deportations can continue, and they have, to the surprise and shock of many people, they're trying to change not only their personnel but the policy. But again, there's always the accountability when it comes to the courts and a review or a challenge from any organization or entity within the agencies.
Okay. Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot to deal with, a lot to digest, a lot to go through, and they will affect a lot of these policies will affect people in different ways depending on how they're here or why they're here or what they're planning to do when they're here.
So since this change, what facet of Greenfield has, I guess you could say, picked up in terms of business?
I have not really seen that much of a change, other than I had been encouraging those individuals who had been here for quite some time to naturalize. That way you never have the threat of deportation, and you have the security and knowledge that you can vote if you register and you are literate and can read and write and understand a ballot. So I have gotten inquiries, and people are concerned with the DACA renewals. They feel more comfortable now. And one of the other things that I think policies that has been revoked was the advanced parole or departures that a lot of DACA recipients or individuals who had left with permission and came back with permission would then be eligible to apply for a green card, whereas previously they hadn't been, and that has been revised and is being reinstated in a way. So I'm just getting inquiries from anyone who's concerned about their immigration status or their friends and family members or neighbors' immigration status. Now they feel a lot more comfortable coming forward and are hoping that this is an atmosphere that will be more hospitable to any applications they have. I mean, you will have, random individuals within the Department of Homeland Security or Immigration Customs Enforcement or USCIS who have their own agenda and sometimes their own personalities that make it difficult and challenging for applicants. But overall, I think once you set the tone that the administration is setting, then it'll be more welcoming and more reasonable, a review of each applicant's submission to the agency for whatever benefit they're seeking.
Okay. So what I want to go ahead and do, because you've been talking a lot, but I appreciate all the information you're giving, I want to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We are here with immigration attorney Nadine Brown. We're talking about the updates since the administration change here, as well as we're going to try to talk a little bit about immigration and Black history. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Nadine, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Good morning and welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. We have immigration attorney Nadine Brown with us. Always a pleasure to have her back and share her wealth of knowledge on immigration policy and the plight of immigrants to and from the United States. So what do you foresee happening in the next 4 years with current administration and with regards to the plight of immigrants?
Well, I know that there's momentum to get legalized a lot of the individuals who are out of status or have no status. And I know that Senator Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham have at least introduced the DREAM Act of 2021 for the DACA recipients to legalize their status. And, you know, everybody has been encouraged or had been encouraged under the Obama administration for that. However, it takes definitely an act of Congress to make that happen, and the momentum wasn't there because it was so vitriolic, and everybody who wanted Obama to succeed had made proposals in the way of bills to get the Dreamers their legal permanent residency status, but that never materialized because we had a divided House. Now we have a Senate and the House that are majority Democrats, so most likely that will happen as far as the DREAM Act passing. But you never know. I mean, we are living in a climate now that is so volatile, and people's opinions and their positions change, and that's just the nature of Congress with their own constituents' positions and opinions, and then the individual lawmaker as well. So I'm hoping, and I think a lot of people that are pro-immigrants are hoping, that the DREAM Act of 2021 at least makes it this year, and then, you know, it makes it to the desk of the president, who will sign it and not veto it for certain. And so people will be legalized. If not the 800 and something DACA recipients or eligible individuals, then all 11 million of those through some other method or means that has been proposed or submitted to the Congress, not just in committee, but to the full vote of the House and the Senate so that it can be passed. That's what we're looking for the next 4 years, but it's anybody's guess. I mean, we're very new into this administration, and we're still trying to deal with the vestiges of the old administration, and you know, people are still in their minds somewhat divided and unsettled, not just because of COVID, but because of the political atmosphere. But I think overall we need to be positive and hope for the best and know that change doesn't come overnight. We thought, or many people think with elections it's automatic, but we know it's a process. From the days that the results come in to the actual inauguration, there was some time that lapsed and until, you know, things go into effect, there'll be some time delay as well. So we just need to be forward-looking, positive, and patient.
Now, I know I asked you about the administration and the changes, but what I'd like to also find out is, over the past year, you have had to deal with, I guess, impact of COVID. How has that caused any particular issues that you've had to deal with over the past year, and what do you see happening now that a vaccine is coming into play?
So when it comes to the immigrant communities, first I will just say that a lot of people are reluctant to come forward to get vaccines, either because if there's a cost associated with it or information that needs to be obtained, then and they're in the shadows or have been in the shadows, and they're not likely to come forward unless they're community health workers that are going to encourage, just for safety reasons, that they to come out and get vaccinated, especially if they're essential workers or they have jobs that require that they be in contact with a large group of individuals. So that's first and foremost, but I would encourage anybody who is eligible and, you know, who won't have terrible side effects, that if they're able to get it and have access, then they should. And do your homework. You know, you're a consumer like anybody else, so informed consent is a thing, and it should be required by healthcare professionals or any community clinics administering or offering. And if you don't feel comfortable, then ask the questions that you need to ask. Get the information for, you know, based on your health profile and whether it's a good vaccine for you. And, you know, right now we have two, and there are others in the works, and we're constantly getting updated from the Centers for Disease Control about what we should do to mitigate the spread of this disease. So that's first and foremost when it comes to the immigrant community that's already here. What I have seen as an impact of the pandemic with my practice and my practice areas and people particularly with immigration are those trying to get into the U.S. who have been waiting for consular services to reopen. And as we know, since the lockdown on or about March 13th of last year, a lot of the embassies have closed worldwide, and now they have reopened, but on a skeletal basis. So they have few workers that are actually reviewing the applications. The process requires that the National Visa Center here in New Hampshire cable and coordinate with the various embassies around the world to schedule visa interviews. So that may be family members of U.S. citizens or permanent residents who are waiting for their immigrant visas to come in, have had a difficult time with delays, and then getting flights back to the U.S. So that they can then reunite with their family members. So that's been the biggest challenge. And I've had people, especially with elderly family members, parents typically, who had been outside when the lockdown occurred and then were unable to get flights back in because the costs were so prohibitive. I mean, if you were a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident trying to get back, sometimes a one-way flight, they would charge you $2,000-$3,000 to get your family member back to the U.S. So that's been the biggest challenge, but it's been reuniting with family members that may have had interviews scheduled last year or up until December, and then they had to wait, you know, a few months longer. A lot of the embassies now have reopened, but again, with the skeletal staff, your application is going to go very slow, and what may have taken 9 months may take now, you know, 18 months to be approved and reviewed. And when it comes to, you know, domestic immigration, people who are going to naturalization ceremonies or who are going to get their green cards at the local offices, they have also had restrictions in place. So for Tampa and Orlando and Jacksonville, for example, the USCIS offices and administrators will only allow one individual or two individuals in, and that those two individuals may include the sponsor and the beneficiary for any interview in addition with the officer. So they will have maybe a maximum of three in the office, whereas before they may have had an up to five or six because they had an attorney or an interpreter with them, you know, or a secondary sponsor. So now they're asking attorneys and interpreters to appear by telephone if necessary, with their clients, and hope most of the officers will contact or remember to contact them before initiating the interview. I've appeared by telephone for some of my clients who've needed additional assistance or at least wanted an observer in the room. And so what we do is we send a fax to the immigration line and, you know, at least a week prior to the interview, and then they will notify us or call us the day of the interview, the time of the interview, and, you know, we can listen in on the conversation. that's kind of the way that things are operating, and everybody is to make sure that once they present to an immigration facility, whether it's for fingerprinting, which is known as an application support center, or for an actual interview, that they must have a valid identification and, of course, wear their masks. So that's kind of how the pandemic has impacted my practice in kind of immigration overall, whether you're domestic or international waiting to get in.
Okay, so now you were talking about the process being extended from possibly 9 months maybe or a year to almost 18 months. And I'm just curious in terms of what glitches, I guess, could possibly happen in that interim.
Well, as far as the wait time, that's from, you know, date of submission until you
mm-hmm.
have fingerprints, until you have you know, your actual interview, and then if it's a naturalization, then there, it's almost like a four-step process. Then you have to have an oath ceremony. I know what they're doing with to streamline kind of the naturalization or citizenship application process is sometimes the day of your interview, if you're successful in passing your English language written and oral test and your civics test, then they can administer the oath the same day. If not during the interview, then shortly after, later in the afternoon. And that's been a joy to several of my clients that they went the day of the interview, and by that afternoon they already had their certificates and they were sworn. So there hasn't been too many glitches when it comes to that. Typically, though, what may happen is with the biometrics. So you have to go in to have a biometric appointment at an application support center, which is a facility close to La Vista, down by the airport. And, of course, because they're on a skeletal crew, it's, you know, and one person at a time, you may be waiting outside in the hot sun these days with the weather, or it may be that they send you a notice saying that they're going to use what information they had on file as far as your biometrics, which consists of a digital fingerprint as well as an electronic photograph that is sent through the FDLE, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, FBI, Florida Federal Bureau of Investigation databases to ensure that you have no criminal history that are concerning or activities that would disqualify you. So most of the glitches, if there are any, would probably be with the biometrics and the holdups when it comes to either having to send and get your information. If people are no-shows because they've been ill or they've been exposed to COVID, or the facility has to shut down because somebody was there. A lot of times we get notices what contributes to delays in the application processing, or even with the immigration court, is that facilities have to be shut down for at least 24 to 48 hours for cleaning because of COVID exposure possibly. And so that's usually, you know, relates to some of the delays that may happen in addition to just the biometric processing for criminal background checks. But overall, you know, typical worker issues because, you know, they either didn't show up to work or something happened and, you know, the processing of the applications get delayed. Those are the things that sometimes contribute to the delays or having to reschedule appointments. But overall, I think now there's a more atmosphere of let's try to get, you know, people resolved and their situations resolved. And so there's a shift in the outlook as to seeing applications in the light most favorable or positive rather than, you know, let's look at every possible means to disqualify, you know, some applicant, which has been the change in the administration and the atmosphere and the tone that has been set.
We are here with immigration attorney Nadine Brown. We are talking about changes in the wake of the change of administration and of COVID. We're going to talk some more with her. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. We're taking a quick break. This is G's Power Hour
on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we'll be right back.
Wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with immigration attorney Nadine Brown. Nadine, I wanted to ask you, where do you see the bulk of the people that are coming into the United States? Where are they coming from, and what are the conditions? Are they voluntary mostly, or is it are there things happening in the country where they're coming from that are causing issues?
I think that depends on which part of the 48 contiguous United States you're in. And for us in Central Florida, we're getting individuals still from Central America, the Caribbean, you know, primarily Haiti, Jamaica, Bahamas, any of the islands that are non-U.S. Virgin or British Virgin Islands. We still get an influx of individuals from that geographic region. You know, out west, it's the same. A lot of people coming up through Mexico and from Central America, and then in northern states from Eastern Europe and from Asia. If you're in the Northwest, Washington State, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming. Colorado. So those individuals will come in through sometimes through Canada or through Alaska. You'll get a huge Asian population from some of the countries out there, South Asian and Middle Asia as well. So it just depends on where you are geographically that you will see different pockets of ethnic and different heritage groups based on what has already been established, and then also the type of work and where the workers are. Silicon Valley has a lot of Asian and South Asian individuals because they're in tech, and we have a lot of, you know, Central Americans and Caribbean individuals who are in hospitality. So it just depends. New York as well has a mix of everybody. So, you know, we're still getting the historic influx of individuals that are coming and they're encountering kind of it's the same system. It hasn't changed. It's just different as far as the policy shifts and how favorable or unfavorable is your application likely to be viewed and how successful, you know, your time here will be. But hopefully it'll be a situation where people don't have to be in the shadows and, you know, they're coming for the same reasons, whether it's natural disaster or because of, you know, political unrest and violence that they're experiencing. You know, people are still applying for asylum because they've either been victimized or have threat of harm to themselves, and people are still coming, you know, for a better way of life because they're fleeing poverty. So those things in the human existence hasn't changed, and those are the reasons why anybody migrates, whether it's from north to south in the United States or from abroad to here. But those things are still what is when it comes to immigration.
So I'm going to approach this subject. It's a little touchy, but I just want to know. Immigrants already have, I guess, some resistance coming into this country. Do you see more or less or the same amount of resistance when it comes to people with darker skin coming into this country?
So it's interesting that you would ask that, especially now, because I just read an article this morning, and it was talking about the rise in the discrimination or violence against Asian Americans. So, you know, historically, especially it being Black History Month, brown and darker skinned people have traditionally been victimized through active and covert discrimination. And now we have, because of the pandemic and the previous administration and some rhetoric and violence talk, you know, people of Asian descent who are varying hues, but because they phenotypically look different than many of us, have been targeted just because of the, they think, the people who have perpetrated violence against them, whether it's random or deliberate, because they look different and, you know, they may have a olive or, you know, different toned skin. But it's just been consistently the same. It's just that the last administration was very venomous in the words that they used and their tactics, which caused a lot of people to be victimized, whether it's through the adjudications process of applications or in regular society. So whether you're brown or black or now yellow, you know, you will be targeted at some point, some way, whether it's overtly or covertly by individuals who are just ignorant and don't know any better or just have malicious intent. But, you know, when it comes to policy shifts, it shouldn't matter where you're from. As long as you're an immigrant and you want a better life, then, you know, nobody can see what your color is on a piece of paper. They may know geographically where you're from because it asks you country of origin, but we shouldn't be discriminating regardless.
I know one point in time we were having issues especially black women going out of the country and then trying to come back in and having to prove that they were American citizens from the beginning. And were, you know, I haven't heard of any of that in quite a while, but I know some of that was going on at one point in time. Have you run into any of that?
Well, I do know, and this is just, I guess, anecdotal information that you would hear. People were profiled, obviously, coming in through Customs and Border Protection at the airport, different ports of entry. Miami was notorious. I don't know about any others, and I've heard different stories. I don't know if that was just, you know, those individual officers that, just like the individual police officers who do nefarious things or criminal things in the course of their office or their, you know, their within the scope or trying to do it within the scope of their authority. But that has happened. I'm aware of it. I don't know that it was necessarily policy that was initiated or something that, you know, people would say it's in a policy manual or a protocol manual. But those things have happened, had happened. I've had several clients, and also not me personally, but people I was traveling with when I was going outside and re-entering, get pulled into secondary inspection or for whatever reason when they're profiling, thinking that you're coming from the Caribbean or from some other country and you're dark skinned, that you're either a drug trafficker or you're, you know, bringing in contraband. And for no other reason, you know, other than you, quote-unquote, look the part, and I don't know what that means, but those things have happened, and I know that they've, I don't know that there's a higher incidence in African-American women, but I, or dark-skinned women, but I do know that it has happened to people coming in from Jamaica, Bahamas, Haiti, on a consistent basis, but I couldn't tell you statistically or have any, you know, confirmed data on that.
Right. And those were the areas that I had heard of that happening too, and I'd seen a few news reports. Like I said, I haven't seen it in a while, but I was just curious if that was anything. Okay, so what I want to know is what rights do you have now if you are approached with someone, and I guess you're not supposed to be approached or discriminated against because someone thinks you are an immigrant, but still, what are your rights?
Well, as you know, as an immigrant, there is still the rule that if you're caught within, you know, 300 miles of a border, they can ask you for documentation. That hasn't changed. I mean, we still have Real ID and Patriot Act because of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And even though the travel bans against certain, quote-unquote, state actors, whether it's considered the Muslim ban or the African ban, have been rescinded, but the Patriot Act and the Real ID Act are still in effect, which means that you need to have identification if you're asked by an officer. Of course, they need to have probable cause or reasonable cause to stop you to determine, you know, your identity or if you need to be or are supposed to be in a place and they have suspicion or there's, you know, criminal activity afoot. So that's for anybody, native or a native, meaning you're an American citizen or born and raised here or you're a naturalized citizen. But if you're a citizen and or you're an immigrant, you should at least carry ID with you, especially the times that we're living in. But those rules have not changed. There's still, you know, illegal search and seizures, and there, you can still protest and contest and take things to court, whether it's against a law enforcement official, whether it's of a federal agency or your local sheriff's office. But, you know, your rights are to ask if you're being detained and what you're being detained for and to always have the right to remain silent and, you know, based on the Miranda and Fourth and Sixth Amendments, illegal search and seizures and notice to ask for legal counsel. So you make sure that you don't, you know, say anything other than who you are and here's your identification. And then anything else you say can be used against you, but it's always to seek legal counseling if you think you need legal counseling. You know, be careful because you're always going to be held accountable for the things that you, you know, do that are improper or against the law, whether you feel justified or not.
I wasn't aware of the 300-mile thing. So, I mean, Florida is a big
problem.
Yeah,
and Florida is one of
anyone.
Those where you can be stopped at any point by an ICE agent or a CBP agent. I tell people that all the time. I said, listen, we're covered on three sides by water, and
oh
everything is
goodness.
You know, a border. So, yeah, you should.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to walk with your passport, but at least, you know, identification, at least, you know, be able to speak clearly and identify yourself if you are stopped because of a, you know, reasonable search or inquiry into who you are and where you're going. And you know, as African-Americans, we know to always be polite to our officers and, you know, hopefully we don't end up like any of the individuals that we've seen on the news and have grieved over, but you just be as polite as possible. And I tell people nowadays you just have to be extremely transactional and as emotionless when responding to law enforcement or some, you know, authoritative individual.
Emotionless. Wow.
Emotionless. Just like very transactional and kind of stoic without, you know, popping off or sassing or whatever word you want to put to it. You know, I think about Sandra Bland and it's like, okay, she was sassing and you get indignant and you get upset at a situation and, you know, there's always two sides to the coin and not to ever justify illegal, abusive or, you know, criminal behavior, but it's you just respond in yes or no answers and, you know, am I under arrest and can I call legal counsel?
Wow. Okay. Okay. Like I said, the 300-mile border, I had no clue about that. So, and that's basically for anybody now, you know. So I guess I won't be going around just footloose or fancy free, I guess you could say. You know, I've been trying to downsize, not carry a purse or whatever, but you've got to carry that ID. What is it?
It needs your identification. If it's not a Florida ID card, then, you know, your Florida driver's license. And for a lot of people, it may be, you know, you don't have to, you know, carry your passport, but at least have your identification with you at all times or have access to it.
And I think the other thing, what used to be the pauper's rule, you also had to always carry $2 or something like that on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's 5% with inflation.
Oh, no. You can't you get away with a card. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, we're here with attorney Nadine Brown, immigration attorney, and she is updating us on what's going on with the immigration rules and issues. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now it's on for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Please hang with us next week on G's Power Hour. We have a full week next week. Chef Z is going to talk to us about Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. She's coming up Monday at noon. We also have our regulars next week, Third Thursday, Burton Kelso and Robert Boughton to talk about tech on Thursday and the garden on Friday. We also have with us author Sharon G. Flake, author of The Skin I'm In. She has another book. She's done several books, and so we're going to talk with her on Wednesday. So please make sure you join us next week. But right now we're back with the Warrior Princess, attorney Nadine Brown, to talk a little bit about immigration issues. So, Nadine, what can you tell us about I know this isn't immigration in the normal sense, but I know there's the history of the Great Migration from the south to the north when it comes to Black history in the early 1900s, around the night. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I had actually read Isabel Wilkerson's book, The Warmth of Other Suns, and another good read is her follow-up, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontent, and it touches a little bit on that, but you know, it being Black History Month and the first obvious non-immigrant immigrants, because they were here by virtue of involuntary decision-making, were the slaves. So they came, and a lot of them came to the slave plantations in the 13 original colonies. And as time progressed and, you know, post-Reconstruction, United States in the 1860s, and so after the proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation that was issued by President Abraham Lincoln, a lot of people post-1965 were in the South, became sharecroppers, and that was kind of a method or a means by which that they could become self-sufficient, because once you're freed, then what do you do? You tend land because that's the only thing that you know, and you purchase land or try to rent land and become sharecroppers, which is essentially what that is, beholden to, you know, a white landowner. And when that became so difficult post-Jim Crow, people started migrating to the north, also because of the manufacturing was and the Industrial Revolution was underway, and people were starting to make things, you know, in the northeast United States, Massachusetts, and anything north of D.C., because D.C. was still considered the South. Robert E. Lee's plantation was in Virginia, and that is now what we have as the Arlington National Cemetery, for people who didn't know. So anything kind of north of Virginia, north of D.C., and, you know, going across west, you know, above the Mississippi, people were migrating to Chicago and you know, Detroit and different places where manufacturing was in full swing and the labor force was dwindling, and people were enticing a lot of the migrants who had been working the plantations and then were encountering difficulties in sharecropping because the landowners were still very vicious in a lot of their economic policies and what they would exact from the individuals who had newly been freed, and so they were migrating north to these different locations, and they would have, like we do now with immigration, that buzzword anchor relative. So people who went, you know, a decade before would then be able to educate and help facilitate sort of a getting into the society, whether it was Chicago or Detroit or New York. And then, you know, people also, you know, did different types of jobs and work. And then eventually, you know, you're looking at the 1920s and the Harlem Renaissance and all of those things where people migrated north and felt a lot freer, not just in their employment, but in their social circles and the things that they would do and could do. And so that renewed kind of their creative spirit. I mean, for to manage and to endure slavery, we already had individuals that were very creative in the arts, whether it was in music or in you know, theater or anything else. But then you have, you know, with the migration, an explosion of creativity, whether it was the Harlem Renaissance, and you have your poetry and your, you know, authors and painters and sculptors and people who were able to then manifest and actualize themselves in different ways. So that was a part and parcel of the Great Migration, is then as a people, you have different individuals who are then able to fully be, because we've had laws that says that, you know, African Americans, slaves, were not even human, we were a chattel, and then as time developed and we evolved, as far as our needs, our wants, and the American society evolved in their thinking and the legal structure, you dismantle Jim Crow, and then now you have people who are able to vote and to you know, be active participants in society. As much discrimination as some people still experience, or the hate that people harbor in their hearts, and the legacy of slavery still lives on, you know, the historical momentum and trajectory that we have been on has been incredible, especially now that we have, you know, a woman who is a vice president, and she's the first, you know, South Asian and woman of African descent in that position in the United States. I mean, that's groundbreaking considering of where African-American or black and brown people have come from when it comes to the history of this nation, kind of not necessarily being the first immigrants, but having that legacy of immigration beginnings and the migration from the South to the North to being all over from, you know, Seattle, Washington, and Alaska, because I'm sure there's some there, to, you know, Miami, Florida. So we cover sea to shining sea.
Amen to that. I want to ask you, what would be the, from this Black History Month, what would be the one thing that you would want people to take away and remember from this month?
Is that Black history is American history? I'm thinking, you know, I'm now the mindset that Black history is good because we have highlights of different individuals that people didn't know were accomplished professionals, artists, not just in, you know, sports and theater, but who mm-hmm. were legal scholars, who were inventors, engineers, you know, whether it's, you know, you're talking about the computer, the actual human computers, as they call them, in the Hidden Figures movie characters, to, you know, the traditional Thurgood Marshall and Martin Luther King, but to know that there's going to be, and that there has been, and will continue to be, individuals that have achieved incredible notoriety or incredible accomplished in their individual professions or fields of industry. But that is American history. So if anything that people should understand is that Black history is American history, because the common thread is that we're here and we have made this society much better, whether it's by, you know, the physical infrastructure or the technology and the advancement of people. You know, all props to the NAACP and every other organization that I could list. But if we don't acknowledge that Black history is American history, I said we will just continue with this loop that we've been on and this pendulum swinging back and forth and having backlash with people, you know, like President Trump, who's now facing impeachment or is in impeachment, and the people who support him, you know, and then having the opposite side. So we need to get past the, you know, everybody be in their little enclave and everybody have their own month of history, which is important because we need to encourage and motivate and understand our own heritage, but in the context of a larger one. We're all Americans.
Thank you so much for that, Nadine. Before we go, how can people reach you?
So I'm working remotely because of the pandemic, but I'm always accessible via email or by phone, and my phone number is 407-678-2224, and my email, esquirebrown@nadinebrownpa.com. And to find out more about my practice areas and my credentials, my experience, and my education, you can go to my website, which is nadinebrownpa.com.
Always a blessing to have you, Nadine. Thank you so very much. You have an awesome day and weekend.
Thank you for having me. Have a blessed day.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you all for listening. Be well, be safe, be blessed. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had so good entertainment. Please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.